This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
John Whitehead is the founder and the CEO of the Rutherford Institute. You can learn a whole lot more online at rutherford.org, and he joins us once a month to talk about a host of current affairs and issues that we read about and get his perspective on things. How are you? Y'all had a busy summer with all the speakers over there. You have a speaker series every summer for all your interns. And is that open to the public or just for the interns?
Yeah, we had a lot of people from the public come in. We had 24 speakers, mainly from out of town, some in town, some professors over here at the University of Virginia, Civil Liberties, ACLU, the Constitution Project, big groups that work with the issues, sue the federal government a lot.
Yeah.
Former Assistant Attorney General Bruce Fein spoke, who has a new book out on the Constitution, and over 20 students from across the country, about half from UVA were there, undergraduate law students, and we covered everything from what Barack Obama's doing to what's happening in the government, out of the government, to social issues, what the meaning of life is. So we do a lot of different things. Students really like it. They all did long, very long papers. In fact, I think this was the best group we've ever had there. They did a lot of series of good issues and papers.
Let me ask you, John.
We had a big First Amendment project this summer, and they did a great job on analyzing the First Amendment free speech.
You've been working with students for a long time, an amazing internship opportunity with the Rutherford Institute available to students across the country. I'm curious if you're seeing any changes in people that age, in students, as they come to the Rutherford Institute.
Yeah, and I thought we could talk about this a little later, but I think that what I'm seeing in most of the students is a searching. Most of them are very, very tuned in to the ones that come to us are tuned in to doing community service, Peace Corps, a lot of neat things. That's why they're there, because we do that. All of our cases, we do a lot of free things for people, legal cases and other educational things that we do. But the thing that strikes me the most, I tell people that increasingly all of them are maybe we can talk about this first, the idea of is there any meaning to life and those kind of, I get those questions in the middle of classes. The question and answer sessions, I'll usually go in, and I don't actually do any of the lecturing, but I will say, tomorrow I'll drop in, let's have an hour of questions or so. I may be there hour and a half, but a lot of it gets into what are we here for, and they're searching. And they're trying to do good things, and questions of morality come up. Because usually I argue that depriving someone of their rights is a moral issue. But when you use the word moral these days, you have to explain it. Because most people, they look at you, especially the young kids, the university students, like you've just said something, a Greek word that they don't understand. But, how you say right and wrong. It's absolutely wrong to oppress people. It's absolutely wrong to oppress women and third world countries. That's a moral issue first and then a legal issue after. But I think increasingly what's happened is that our society is so caught up in materialism. In fact, there's that great speech that Martin Luther King gave back in 67 where he says we've become a thing-oriented society and it's destroying us, materialism. And I think we've come to that point where a lot of people are seeing that, maybe the big job, the big car isn't it, that there's something more important.
Yeah.
And there's a fellow out of a Yale University professor, Alan Cronman, out of Yale, who's argued that the universities have blown it. They don't teach meaning anymore. And that's why you're getting, I think, a whole brood of young people who are going, gee, there is there a meaning? And the surveys show that kids, in their late teens, over 10%, 15%, see, there's absolutely no meaning to life. They don't understand what's going on. They have no clue why they're here. And another survey showed that those kind of kids get into adverse risk behavior, drugs, fights, dangerous, because a significant core don't even believe they'll live to be 30 years old.
Golly.
So that's what happens to American society right now.
Yeah.
It's a real problem, but you ask me what I see in the young people, they're searching now. They're searching for meaning. Why am I here is the big question.
Yeah.
What am I and why am I here? But that used to be taught in schools. It used to be discussed. And that's what this Yale University professor is saying. He said, maybe you can do it without religion. Maybe not, who knows, you know, and we dodge all those issues now. By the time you get into university, like I think Cronman says, Professor Cronman, you're not getting any of that. You can teach it through Socrates, but they're not getting it through that. So at the end of the day,
all they got is a search for a good job.
Search for a good job, materialism. But, you know, other societies teach it. That's why they're so dogged and dogmatic, you know. But he even goes on further to say, Cronman, that the religious right was not good, but at least they're talking about those kind of things. He said that's the only benefit of something like the Christian right, is that they talk about those kind of values, but in a very dogmatic kind of overbearing way. But
there's such a detriment to teaching our kids more to identify themselves more in this world as a consumer in a marketplace rather than in a citizen in a country. I'm so frustrated by all these calls, you know, these radicals, most on the right, but some on the left, that it's all about, you know, free market this. You know, to me, it's about free country and
free country.
Citizenship, not free market and consumer.
Higher values. And that's what King was talking about. We've gotten away from that. He was, again, we didn't listen to Martin Luther King in 1967, you know, but, you know, they're... I mean, you have a searching generation. Where it will end, I don't know. But I think that is the major change that I see is just that search. It comes out when you're talking about legal matters. So they're searching. The other thing is I noticed that this group that's coming of age now and the one that just came of age, kind of a lost culture in the sense that they have no cultural memory. When you're in a class and you bring up the name Bob Dylan to a 25-year-old kid today, not anybody knows who that is. I mean, it would seem that somewhere along the line of the education system,
they would have picked that up somewhere.
It'd be a cultural course on culture, the people that really influenced the Bill Clintons, the Obamas, and people that run the world, but they're just absolutely clueless on that stuff. It's almost like you go back and go, oh well, yeah, there was this guy back in 1965 that did this, but they have some history, but I think that as far as culture and meaning, so I don't know what it means, but
interesting,
it's that's what we see.
We are talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute, honored to have him live in studio, and the phone lines are always open for you at 977-1070. Let's take a quick 2-minute break, and when we get back, John, let's talk about your thoughts on the swine flu and internment camps. That coming up in just a few minutes. It's 19 minutes after 5 o'clock. This is Charlottesville right now. It's News Radio 1070 WINA. It's about 73 degrees. We'll have a full weather report for you at the bottom of the hour, along with some local news. And stay tuned tonight for Best Seat in the House at 6. And the new Al Groh show tonight at 7. No more calls, but they will take your emails. We are talking live in studio with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. Honored to have him with us. So, John, what are your thoughts about the swine flu scare that's going on and the talk of these impending, what could be 2 or 3 shots that... they're now looking at, requiring and doing in schools and all this kind of stuff.
Well, you know, last week it was all over the news, 90,000 people could get the swine flu. There was even figures from the government that half the population could be infected. The Internet's going crazy with people emailing about things they've heard, what can happen. I've talked to average, ordinary human beings who are not paranoid or who are not into conspiracy theories who don't want to get the vaccination because of the things they've heard about the vaccination. I'm no doctor, so I don't know. But the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, has to go through certain procedural requirements before they supposedly release these to the public. Notice and comments, rulemaking, completion of risk assessment, cost-benefit analysis before they even do any of this stuff. Public can make comments on this. They're rushing ahead, and I understand it may be an emergency, but it's fueled all kinds of theories on the Internet and things that we check out to see what's right. But we do know, and you know, vaccinations can cause some real problems.
Yeah.
Links to autism, down the list, arthritis, dermatitis, and supposedly maybe 2 to 3 shots for this to get the swine flu. If you get it in between, the question is, can they force it? Can the government do that. I think, obviously, under law, they probably can if they declare an emergency. There's several laws that operate here. One is the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act. It's called the PREP Act of 2006. What it does, it allows the Department of Homeland Security, Health and Human Services to declare an emergency. And basically, people will have to get it, probably. We don't know for sure. It's a little ambiguous. But under these laws, the drug companies are immune from liability. So if they issue a bad batch, you die from it. Unless it's willful misconduct under the law, which would mean they intentionally put out a bad, and that'd be very difficult to prove.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing you can do if you die from it, basically. Yeah, they're all under the Bush administration. They made sure that everybody's, whether they don't go through the rulemaking process, FDA, government officials can't be sued, they're okay. The questions come up with internment camps, and that's, we're a civil liberties group, so that's what we look at. In 2006, the Bush administration issued a contract, and it was very quietly announced, $385 million to a group called KBR, which is a subsidiary of Halliburton, which Dick Cheney used to be president of that group. The question is, that was 3 years ago, they were supposed to put $385 million to build so-called containment camps, which would be places that contain people. The alleged reason was for illegal immigrants, but even at the time, that didn't make any sense because illegal immigrants are all over this country. Why would we put them, they work in the restaurants and hotels. Why would we put them in a containment camp? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So the question came up, if you're going to build containment camps, why are you building them? Who are they for? That was never answered. So we've been on the phone recently with Halliburton, KBR, Department of Homeland Security, trying to find out what happened to the $385 million. And you want to talk about going around in circles. They continually send you back to the other group, continually. And it's absurd. You can't get an answer. But they did get the money. They did get the contract. Supposedly, it was renewable to build the camps. The thing about Halliburton, though, they have followed through. They got money to build those silly walls down there between Mexico and the United States where they left gaps at golf courses and the immigrants just came across in the golf courses. I paid a lot of money for that.
God.
Totally inefficient. So the question is, have they built the camps? We don't know. If it is, it's very, very secret. We have confirmed.
And this is not like a black ops thing. We know that they gave them this money. We know
it
they
came
got
out.
The money.
All those contracts had to be public. It was a public contract. But it was no press release like we're giving them 300. And if you remember back shortly after 9/11, John Ashcroft made a statement about the containment camps, which got a lot of press. People were freaked out because they were going, what's he talking about, concentration camps in America? So the question, do they exist? There is some correspondence between some congressmen and some military officials back in the late 1990s that confirmed that there are containment camps on some military bases around the United States. That was in the late 90s. Containment camps for whom? We don't know. So the big issue is, do they exist? Getting an answer out of the United States government, we're going to dog them. If not, we're going to start asking the question of some of our representatives here in Virginia, where is that $385 million? Well, our tax money. But do I think that they would move ahead and build some kind of camp? Probably, because their history has been very consistent. They do spend the money, maybe not wisely. So there may be, and I don't know, some kind of containment camp somewhere. I just don't know. Now, there are, if you go to some websites, they have pictures of camps. Whether those actually exist?
Yeah, you never know.
We don't know.
And why is this relevant to the swine flu vaccine story?
Because the theory that's posed out there is that some people, and this is a time of high paranoia for whatever reason, because of the economy, Barack Obama's continuing of the kind of Bush civil liberties problems, that the government might do something a little coercive and strange. But there are people who are probably going to refuse to get the vaccines because they could die from it, or their children might die from it. And that supposedly is the theory being proposed, that it would be for those kind of people who might be infected. But we don't know. See, it's the same thing that we have with the illegal immigrant issue. Does that make sense? Maybe.
Yeah.
But in a time of high pandemic, swine flu, what would happen. The question is martial law. In 2006, the Bush administration and the 2006 defense appropriations budget and bill, they did two stealth provisions they put in the bill, which gave Bush the right to declare martial law for a national emergency and epidemic. 2008, that was taken out of that defense appropriations bill. So under federal law per se, the president cannot declare martial law and have people round up put in camps. However, under federal law, he already has that power as commander-in-chief of the armed forces. And the word epidemic is in the law. If a national emergency or epidemic is declared, the president can take charge of the National Guard, send troops in, and round up people if need be. It says to restore public order, which would mean people with guns, army outfits, which would be intimately connected to the local police authorities because they are connected through intelligence agencies and stuff to the local police, who dress in many communities much like the military, with black outfits, helmets, face scars so you can't tell who they are when they arrest you. And, of course, the Bill of Rights issue comes up. Coming into your home, taking you out of your home, Fourth Amendment violation, unreasonable search and seizures, those kind of things come up. So should we discuss these things? Yes. How serious we should take them? I don't know. But the government will not give you an answer, which creates a problem.
Yeah. They won't give you an answer to your questions, but they're working overtime trying to scare the living daylights out of you when it comes to the swine flu.
And the question arises on that, and I think there is some credible writers who have written that there's going to be a lot of money made by the big pharmaceutical companies off the swine flu vaccine. It's in their best interest to see this happen.
Yeah.
Even if you don't, if it's not an epidemic, they make a lot of money. We know that.
Yeah.
And the big pharmaceutical industries, and I've written, and we've studied them at the Rutherford Institute, their lobbying power is second to none. They're probably the most powerful lobbying force in the United States government. They're almost an arm of the United States government.
Yeah.
Very, very powerful. Joe Biden's been meeting with them secretly in his home. Obama's been meeting with pharmaceutical giants secretly in the White House, not releasing White House logs. So they have that much power. So who knows what's going on? We just don't know. We have a secret government. We still have a secret government. Unfortunately, we thought it might go away with George W. Bush, but it has not.
We are talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. We're going to take a break for local news and weather. When we get back, John, let's talk about your thoughts on the town hall meetings. All that coming up and more. Stay with us. About 73 degrees here in Central Virginia at 38 minutes past 5 o'clock. This is Charlottesville Right Now, News Radio 1070 WINA. My name is Coy Barefoot. I want to wish you a very happy Monday afternoon. I hope you're doing well. I hope you have a great night ahead of you. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk with George Gillum of the Miller Center, Frank Friedman of PVCC, and Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow will join us for our Tuesday growth and development discussion. Stay tuned tonight for Best Seat in the House coming up at 6, followed by the Al Groh's all-new coaches show. His Coach's Corner program beginning at 7:06 on the clock. Tonight, no more calls, but they will take your emails. Complete details at WINA.com. John Whitehead is the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. He joins me live in studio on this Monday afternoon. Let's talk about healthcare reform, the town hall meetings. Before we talk about one of your essays specifically dealing with the town hall meetings, what are your general thoughts about this whole thing, healthcare reform in America? And this has been the headlines now all summer long.
Yeah, I think that a number of commentators have said it was, and they're starting to say it was a political mistake to go bonsai on the healthcare issue right now. Let me explain. What people really need right now is to get back to work. We need to put them back in their homes. There's homelessness in Washington, D.C. has almost jumped 10% since Obama's been in office.
Wow,
he can see homeless people from the White House. It's a problem here. I've met with some of the homeless people in this area. I think, and again, this is not entirely my idea, but what I think Obama should have done is said this: I'm going to do health care, folks, but here's how I'm going to do it. I'm setting up a blue ribbon panel of 40 of the best experts from the health insurance industry, doctors, people have been involved, and we're going to do an extensive study and do a report on how to do this right. And within a year, we're going to draft a bill, and we're going to move forward on health care, which is badly needed in the country. In the meantime, if I'd have been him, and I said, people ask me, what should Obama do first if he wants to keep his approval rating up, which is now dipped from 76% down to 50. It's headed below 50 if he doesn't do something. He's no longer the popular president that he once was. Just fly to Peoria, roll your sleeves up, and demand the Caterpillar tractor company put people back to work. Get the local politicians, organize community job searches, get people back in their homes. That should have been the first priority, in my opinion, because that's what people need right away. I don't think you'd be having there wouldn't be any town hall meetings yet. No, there wouldn't even be time for that. In that year period, have the blue panel committee. Instead of politicians drafting the bill, which we have now, we have basically Washington elitist politicians drafting a bill again, over 1,000 pages, which many of the politicians that will be voting it will not read. They'll get briefed from their assistants because it's difficult to read 1,000 pages of gobbledygook.
Yeah.
come up with a really clear plan how they can help those people who don't have health insurance. But let the experts do it. And then present it to the public. And then you don't have to have Senator so-and-so going to town hall meetings defending himself. He's got a blue ribbon panel that's made these suggestions. And bring those people with you who know what they're doing. Because your average politicians, we know, they didn't read the U.S. Patriot Act. They didn't, before that was passed, they don't read bills. They don't work, a lot of them, a full-time job. And I think Obama would still be a very political president. I don't think most people, we elected an African-American president. Most people don't dislike Obama, dislike him because he's an African-American. I don't think so. Some people are racist, obviously, but I think saviors come in a million different colors. If he'd have flown to Prescott, Arizona, instead of going to the Grand Canyon one week and Martha's Vineyard on a vacation, I think I'd put him on the road. I wouldn't be in Europe. I'd be in the United States getting people back to work. And we wouldn't have these crazy town hall meetings we're seeing. But the town hall meetings, I think, again, I've written on the town hall meetings.
Let me tell you this. I think you ought to go to the banks as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
And say, where the heck is all the money we gave you for you to lend that would help the economy?
And you're sitting on it.
They're sitting on that money. They're hoarding that money. They're using it for bonuses. They're sending it overseas to other overseas ventures. It's criminal, as far as I'm concerned. That was not money for them to just sit on. That was money that they were supposed to turn around and get back out into the economy.
Exactly. I have people that are good friends of mine who are real estate agents in Charlottesville, and they say working with the banks is horrible. Can't hardly get anything through the banks. Yeah. They're sitting on the money. Yeah, that's another thing. Yeah, cracking down on that. So there's a lot of things Barack Obama would do, and he'd still have a 76.8% approval rating. It wouldn't be any problem. And there wouldn't be any town hall meetings yet. Get people back to work. They won't be so darn frustrated. I think a lot of people that show up at these town hall meetings are very, very frustrated. A lot of them are seniors. They're decent human beings. Of course, it's rowdy, but what they think is happening, and it may not be true, the people in Washington, D.C. are ramrodding a bill through, which no one understands, basically out in middle America, that hasn't been studied by the experts, that hasn't been evaluated by the experts. And people are going bonsai at these meetings, obviously. People have asked me, well, what do you think generally about the town hall meetings and people yelling and screaming? Well, the First Amendment does not require civility. And one that I wrote, Thomas Jefferson said we need a revolution every 20 years. He wasn't talking about being nice. I mean, he was a very radical man. I often said on the Patriot Act, Jefferson would have been one of the first people to round it up because of what he was saying. He was talking about taking up arms late in his life. So I wrote one about the crazy, bringing guns to town hall meetings is insanity. First of all, someone's going to shoot their foot off if they don't be careful. And then some policeman's thinking that he's defending somebody, he's going to blow somebody away, and they're going to shut down the town hall meetings. I wrote one saying, "Don't. It's stupid to bring guns to town hall meetings. Stop." And a lot of gun people came out and just blasted me. It went up on Huffington Post, and all these people were saying, "You don't believe in the Second Amendment." Yes, I do. Guns are for two things, basically, in America. Go hunting or defend yourself. Why would you bring a gun to a town hall meeting? It's incredibly stupid. Sure, if you want to intimidate people, well, do it with your voice. You know, don't bring a gun, because I think it's incredibly stupid. I think you have a right to strap on a gun in America. I mean, the Supreme Court just a couple years ago upheld the right of individuals to own guns. You can own a gun. If it's licensed, you can put it on and carry it. But do I think that's a wise thing to do? No. I think it's absolutely incredibly stupid. But I think that what we're seeing in middle America and around the country is people are really frustrated. They had 8 years of Bush, which completely drained psychologically this country. It was awful. I remember first writing about Bush in about 2002 when I was attacking Bush. The emails were 9-1 against me. By the time he went out of office, it was almost 99% people in favor of what I had to say. People came around. They said, this is too much. The guy doesn't care about the Constitution. And now...
Yeah, a lot of conservatives even turned against him.
Oh, yeah. Blasted him. Yeah, he didn't believe in the rule of law. Yeah.
Well, he was taking the party down with him, you know?
He did take the party down. And then the monstrous financial problems happened during the Bush administration under his so-called privatization plans.
Yeah.
And now Barack Obama's in 7 or 8 months. Is it 8 months he's been in office? And people thought he was Jesus revisited. He was going to create miracles. And so now we find out that he really doesn't walk on water.
Yeah.
And he's in the Washington Matrix now, and things have changed with Barack Obama. I mean, problems. I mean, I wrote a column saying what happened to all the change that we were going to hear, all the slogans that we were going to get. You know, Dahlia Lithwick, who is the senior editor at Slate, who lives here locally, she calls Obama the keeper of Bush secrets. The great Nat Hinhoff, the great civil libertarian, calls Obama George W. Obama. The left has soured on the man they thought was going to save them.
And what is he doing specifically, you think, that is causing this type of reaction?
Well, he's been very secretive. His government's very, very secretive. They basically kept all the secretive policies of Bush and the Guantanamo. He was going to do away with Guantanamo, and he was going to get rid of the military commissions, of course, but he's not doing that. I signed on with the Constitution Project today trying to influence the government. We're going to try people, try them in civilian criminal courts, and because all these people have been held for years without even a charge being brought against them by American soldiers, okay? And they may move up onto American soil. Once they do that, they have a right to be in a court somewhere pleading a lawyer. That's what our Constitution demands, okay? People are concerned about that. So it came out really clearly that they've been meeting secretly. Joseph Biden was meeting secretly in his home with large pharmaceutical giants in his home secretly, and they found that out. They've been meeting secretly in the White House. There's a lot of secretiveness. Why? I thought we were going to have. I think that what we all wanted was openness in government. Bush was secret. Everything was secret. Why all the secrecy? See, we the people is the first three words in the Constitution. The government is accountable to us. They need to tell us what they're doing. If they're meeting with people in the pharmaceutical industry, we need to do that. Yeah. We need to know all about that. If they're undermining the Constitution, if they're doing things that violate civil liberty, someone's got to tell us what's going on.
Giving $385 million to Halliburton to build
internment camps. What happens to the money? Yeah. Why isn't there a public report on, well, they spent it for barbed wire, they spent it for guard posts, whatever. So that's the problem. And do I think people are frustrated? Yes. I've met very few people that aren't completely naive, that aren't frustrated in some way or another with what's going on. No jobs, the rotten economy. Bill Maher came out and blasted the comedian, who is far left as you can get, and said, Barack, get off of television. Get off of vacation and go back to work.
Right.
That's what we want. When I saw he was at the Grand Canyon, my first thought was, jeez, I paid for that as a taxpayer. A. B. I would rather him sit at his desk and get a picture of it and look at it for now. Then he went to Martha's Vineyard, and I thought, most Americans cannot afford a vacation.
Let alone a vacation at Martha's Vineyard.
No, yeah. Or a trip to look down into a large hole called the Grand Canyon. So I think it's time for the president to roll up his sleeves, get back. I mean, I work at my desk every day. I pay taxes to support his appearance on the Jay Leno show, which cost taxpayers $7 million. I don't want to be paying for that. So I think the question I always raise with politicians who say they really run the government, when they're on the vacations and here and there, who is really running the United States government?
We're talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. A quick break. When we get back, we'll talk about the United States Constitution. This is Charlottesville Right Now. Got about 7 minutes before 6 o'clock. This is Charlottesville Right Now.
Moving forward, using all my breath.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, we'll talk with George Gillum of the Miller Center, Frank Friedman, president at Piedmont Virginia Community College, and Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. Let's rejoin our conversation with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. We want to talk about Constitution Day before we let you go, but can you talk about this your new essay, which I don't even think this has been published yet.
Yeah, it just came out today.
It just came out today, okay. Yeah. It's called The War on Kids.
Yeah. There's a documentary out called The War on Kids by director Kevin Soling, and it's a great documentary. You can get it at thewaronkids.com. He interviewed me. I'm actually on the documentary. He interviewed me on what's happened legally in the schools. But mainly it focuses on what's happened to American schools with zero tolerance policies, kids overdrugged on Ritalin, the craziness that goes on in schools generally today. Kids have learning problems, and
it's a totally different thing now than when we were kids, or when you were a child or when I was a child in school. It's a completely different animal now. We wouldn't recognize it if we were in school today.
Yeah, and what the neat thing he does on it's about an hour and a half, 2 hour documentary. It won a number of awards at film festivals, but. What he goes into, and I think the neat thing, he interviews a lot of kids in schools and gets their opinion. And then the experts in the legal field, educators, scientists. But one of the most revealing things that comes through is just how many kids in America's schools are on drugs. 4 million children in the United States, at least, are on drugs. That's 90% of Ritalin prescriptions in the world.
Prescription drugs?
Prescription drugs,
yeah.
Ritalin. 90% of all Ritalin prescriptions are in America. So he asked the question, why in America? And again, it goes back to the pharmaceutical industry, how powerful they are in America's public schools. You have zero tolerance policies where kids are thrown out of school for throwing spit wads, having Tweety Bird keychains, CERT breath mints, all kinds of craziness that goes on in the school. So it's a little scary. The documentary is scary. When you finish it, you go, I showed it to the interns this summer, and that was a great conversation. We talked about what we could do better in schools, and what we need parental involvement more in schools, and what parents can do. And so it's a really mind-engaging commentary. If you go on my website at rutherford.org, you can get the website I talk about. But I just encourage people to get that and watch it. You may not agree with all of it, but it raises some very serious concerns.
Absolutely. That's John Whitehead's latest essay. It's called The War on Kids. And what's the website again for the documentary?
It's waronkids.com.
Waronkids.com. We should have him on the program. I'll see.
He's excellent, yeah. Yeah. Very, very, very well. He did his homework. Interviewed a lot of people.
We'll set that up and have him on the program and promote that.
That'd be very, very good.
Constitution Day is coming up, John. September 17th.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's good we have Constitution Day. It's in, the Constitution was formally adopted on September 17th, 1787. It supposedly is a big day of celebrating the Constitution, but how often do you hear about it, folks? Not much. Supposedly on that day, there's instruction to government officials about the Constitution, but I'm not sure how much of that goes on. All the surveys show that most people don't have a clue what's even in the First Amendment to the Constitution. And so what I'm telling people on Constitution Day is get active. First thing you need to do is get educated. And I emphasize with people the Bill of Rights is only 462 words, which means that if you are a very slow reader and you move your mouth as you read, it takes about 5 minutes to read them. And I say teach your kids. We have and I'll give anybody that calls the Rutherford Institute locally here a free Bill of Rights pamphlet. It has pictures in it. I should have brought some tonight, but I didn't. But what it will do is you can sit down with your child. We've done some of the local public schools. The kids love this little pamphlet. You can actually teach your child the Bill of Rights. Why is that important? Well, if you don't know what your rights, you don't know when they're violated and what they stand for. So this little pamphlet goes through it. So do that. And I just generally tell people, become active. Get involved. Like the people who started this country, they didn't sit by and watch TV or watch Glenn Beck or Lou Dobbs or whoever, Wolf Blitzer. They got out. They got up and went out and did it. That's what you have to do. Don't back down. I use Martin Luther King as a good example. Get out there and stir up some trouble. Carry a picket sign. If you don't agree with your local representative, and some people have done that locally, I commend them. You may not agree with everything they do. And most of all, I think, again, I talk about we the people, you know, the government's accountable to us. It's your fault if the government's not working. Bug the holy poop out of your local representative. Email them, call them if you don't like what they're doing. Don't sit by and watch it go down the drain. I mean, time is of the essence. We know that. If you've listened to this program, you know time is of the essence. But again, they want to call Rutherford 978-3888. I'll give you a free Bill of Rights pamphlet.
There you go. John Whitehead is the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. John, thank you so much. Always enjoy it.
Thank you, sir.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.